when I started writing more consistently and actually started to share that with my kids, I saw them take off in their creativity. They started valuing what they were doing more when they saw that it was something that I valued, right, in my own life. Like, the, you know, kids, they're preparing for adulthood. And so if they see the adults in their lives don't value creativity, then they're not going to value it either. And my husband's a songwriter also. So that kind of, like, they've got both parents kind of modeling that, which I think is great and has really helped them to value creativity in our own lives. Because we're all creative, right? We have a way that that is meant to be used in our life. It may not be vocational, but we have creativity that we can use to enrich our lives and the lives of others.
Welcome to the Homeschool Compass podcast, a show that's all about finding confidence in community and help in the wisdom of those who've gone before. I'm your host, Amy Otto, and I'm thrilled to kick off a new year and a new season of the Homeschool Compass podcast with Carolyn Leilaglu. Carolyn is a homeschooling mom of four wildly creative kids and an award-winning author. She's written one of my family's new favorite books, Beneath the Swirling Sky. It's a middle grade fantasy novel. It would be amazing as a family read aloud or an independent read to give to your tween or teen. Our family is so excited for the next installment in the series. We love a good series. So if you haven't already, be sure to grab your copy of Beneath the Swirling Sky at christianbook.com. I know you're going to love this conversation with Carolyn. She has so much wisdom to share about how we can support our kids in developing their creative passions through homeschooling. We have the time, we have the flexibility, and we have the freedom to really allow our kids to invest in creative pursuits, and we can offer them some protection from the kind of peer pressure that often stifles creativity as our kids get older. You can check out the show notes at homeschoolcompass.com/podcast for links to the resources Carolyn mentions today, some of the things that she has found helpful for her family. But for now, I hope you enjoy this conversation with Carolyn Leilaglu. Welcome to the Homeschool Compass podcast, Carolyn.
Thank you so much for having me, Amy. I'm so excited to be here.
You have written such a fun book, Beneath the Swirling Sky. I'm really excited for our families to get their hands on it. And you're also a homeschooling mom, which is really fun. So
That's right.
I'd love to hear a little bit about you and your family and how you got started with homeschooling.
Sure. So we live in South Texas, and I'm married to a pediatrician, Demetrius. We've got four kids. So one actually just graduated from our homeschool. We've homeschooled from the beginning. It's funny because I went to private school and he went to public school, and we actually both had good experiences, but kind of felt they were kind of more uniquely good. And had decided even before we got married that we were going to homeschool. And then it was just kind of confirmed when I was working with the youth at our church and just seeing the homeschool girls, the high schoolers in my group, and just being so impressed with them. And I was like, yes, this is what I want for my kids. So yeah, so we've homeschooled from the get-go. We've got four kids. The oldest, like I said, is 18 and has graduated. She's taking a gap year and working for her dad. And then I have a 16-year-old son and then a 13 and 10-year-old daughters.
Nice. So you've got a good spread. Do you have a particular style of homeschooling that you guys use?
So we've been pretty eclectic. I'm always kind of willing to try something else if I feel like it'll work better. In the early years, we were definitely a little bit more Charlotte Mason leaning, but never probably 100%. And then currently, we are, I would describe it as hybrid homeschooling. Most of my kids are taking either some or all of their classes from Wilson Hill Academy, which is an online classical Christian school for homeschoolers. You can take, you know, one or two classes, or you can do their diploma program, which is very challenging, but has been very, very good for my older two kids. But it's not a fit for everybody. And so we're currently trying out an in-person co-op that has different classes for my 13-year-old this year. And I think that's been a good thing. So she has like a mix of what she's doing. So then with my youngest, she takes a couple of Wilson Hill classes and then does the rest with me.
Yeah, I love that about homeschooling, that you really have the flexibility to find what your individual children need. You don't have to do the same thing for all your kids. You can tailor it to their needs and their interests.
For sure.
Do you have any favorite parts of homeschooling?
Probably several. One of my favorite things about homeschooling is just kind of the family closeness, like us getting to have more input into our kids' lives and enjoying them. And also the sibling relationships have been really close. Not that everybody gets along all the time. We have two that are kind of like oil and water sometimes, but you know, they're still learning to work through that. But I think it's really lended a lot of closeness to the family. And then another thing that's been important to me from the beginning is for the kids to have time to pursue their own creative pursuits, and not just time, but also less peer pressure that I think makes a lot of kids shut down those pursuits if they're in traditional school a little early on, which is kind of a big theme of my book. So, you know, I have a kid who loves to write, a kid who composes on the piano, I have one who crochets, and one who draws and collages. They're all like just super creative and have time to spend on that, which I really love.
I wonder what some of the challenges you've encountered over your years of homeschooling have been.
One of the big ones was a period of transition, which we all go through, but my husband was starting his own pediatric office, and there was just kind of a time between those and getting started, and I was having to help a lot. And my oldest would have been 9 at the time, I believe. And we'd been doing Ambleside Online, which she had enjoyed. She loves reading, and it had been great for her. But with me being more stretched and having to help with the office, I wasn't really keeping up with the reading with her and able to discuss it in a way that, you know, that made it interesting enough for her. And she kind of got to the point where she hated school, which I, you know, she always hated math, but like for her to hate reading was like, okay, something has to change. And so that was a little bit of a wake up call for me. And then, you know, I think Ambleside is a great curriculum, but like, because of her feelings about it at the time, we just had to look for something new. So that was one big one. And then another one was when we found out that both of our younger daughters have dyslexia. So that was a big change. We actually late diagnosed our third child because she had learned to read. It had taken forever, but she had learned to read. And then when I was working with our youngest, I was like, why isn't she getting it? She's such a smart child. Like, I just don't understand. And then looking into it more and talking to some people. And then finally we went to take both of them to get tested, and they both had dyslexia. So we kind of spent a year doing some kind of intensive, like they call it brain training, but like kind of learning therapy. And it really helped, especially with the younger one who really was not consistently able to read when we started. But again, that was like a big change to what our schedule was and what we were prioritizing. So that was definitely a challenge, but yeah, we're glad to have worked through that and be in a new season with them now.
I think it's maybe something we don't talk about enough in the homeschool community, that I think if you've homeschooled 5, 10, 15 years, there are some years that just kind of feel like a total wash, right? Everything you had envisioned, you know, gets sidetracked, whether it's a new baby, an illness, a military deployment, a job situation. There's just so many different things that come up in the course of life. And as homeschoolers, we really have to kind of slow down and adjust in those moments. But we don't have to beat ourselves up about that or feel like a failure. We can keep steadily moving forward. And I think homeschoolers who have seen the process through to the end, like you, can often look back and say, you know, God used those moments in ways that I couldn't have imagined. And it's okay. We made it, you know, we worked through it. And we're still together as a family, and God is faithful to carry us through those seasons.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, I'm so excited about your new book, Carolyn. I love that it has a character in it that's homeschooled. I know we frequently get asked if we can recommend any books with homeschooled children in them, and there just really aren't that many, but this one definitely is a great one. Can you tell us a little bit about the story?
Yes. So it's the story of 12-year-old Vincent. He is a kid who has given up on art until he learns that his family are the last of the Restorationists. They're a secret society with the ability to travel through paintings and the duty to protect them. So when his little sister goes missing into the starry night, he and his know-it-all cousin Georgia have to go in and rescue her. And Georgia is the homeschool character in this, and Vincent's the character who went to traditional school like me and kind of gave up on his art in this similar way to I gave up on writing. So I drew from a lot of personal experience for his character. And homeschoolers everywhere will be excited to learn that George is actually the viewpoint character for book two. So a full-on homeschool character book. But that was important to me to have because we've homeschooled all the way. And yeah, we're always excited if we can find a book with a homeschooled character, even if it's a secondary character.
Yeah, you can definitely see the contrast in their personalities and kind of their approach to the challenges that they're confronted with. She definitely has a very outside the box kind of way of handling things, which I really love. Where did you get the idea for this book, Carolyn? Is this something that had been percolating for you for a long time?
Not for a long time, but I think the seeds were always there for it. So growing up, visiting my grandparents' house, they had paintings on every wall. They were art collectors, mostly like American art. And they even had a room upstairs that was just stuffed full of the extra paintings they didn't have room for. They were just in stacks against the wall. And so anyone who's read the book already will know that is actually the room that this adventure begins in. That's the jumping off point. And so that was one thing. And then also my mom was an art major, was an art teacher before we were born, or before my brother and I were born. And so I grew up probably knowing a little bit more about art just from like casual conversation and just things she would teach us, and was always kind of interested in art, although I'm definitely not a visual artist myself and don't really have any pull in that direction to be that. It's always been writing for me. So those seeds were all there. And I was in a writing webinar back in 2019, and the person leading the webinar asked us to think about the most magical place from our childhood. And for me, it was hands down my grandparents' house. And we actually lived there for a few months during a move. And so kind of instantly, I started thinking about the paintings and what it would be like to go into one and what kind of character would need that kind of journey. So that's kind of where the idea sparked and how it grew.
Yeah. And there's a ton of art related content. I mean, you could very easily read this book as part of your homeschool and then branch off into all kinds of art exploration. There's so much about Van Gogh and other painters. And you have lots of ideas at therestorationist.com for people to bring along with them.
That's right. Yeah. There's actually a book club guide that my publisher created. And then there's a link to a artist like picture study guide, like Charlotte Mason style, but with a restorationist twist, if people are interested in that. And we did some of that, you know, when my daughter was in Ambleside and other times with picture study, kind of Charlotte Mason style. And I always thought that was really interesting way to look at art and approach it. So some of this was like things I knew from growing up, but then there was it was a pretty research heavy book, which I don't know that I anticipated when I started writing it. But, you know, I think it really made it kind of richer. And then in the back of the book, there's a list of all the actual paintings that the kids visit and where they can be seen. And then the paintings that are possessed by the bad guys are paintings that have actually been stolen and not recovered. So it's kind of a cool tie-in with the real world and with the art world.
Did you go see some of the paintings in the book in person as part of your research? Have you ever been where any of them are?
I have been, but when I was writing the book, it was 2020 and no one was going anywhere.
That's right.
So I was very grateful, actually, that Google Street View actually had walkthrough images of several museums, one of them being the Van Gogh Museum in Amsterdam, because even if I could have gone somewhere, I probably wouldn't have been able to go there. So they had a really great walkthrough, and they had, you know, the museum has like map layouts. So I did a lot of kind of study into like what that looks like. There's a chase scene that happens in that museum. So I had to know kind of how it worked. But this past summer, kind of in research for book two and beyond, I got to visit New York City, a friend who lived there, and we went to the Met and to the MoMA, and I got to see Starry Night again. I hadn't seen it since college, and that was a very cool experience. And then just see a lot of the other paintings that are going to be in book two, and hopefully, I don't think I've said this yet, but the setting for book three, a lot of it is going to be at the Met in New York. So that was kind of a research trip to kind of get a feel for what that was like.
Okay, yes, because this is the first book in a trilogy. So there's going to be books total, right?
Yeah.
My son, who's 12, is so excited. He loves a good series. He loves being able to read multiple books and stay with characters for a long time. So he was very excited that there would be more to come from you. Well, you alluded, Carolyn, to the fact that maybe writing was something that you loved early on, and then you kind of stepped away from it for a little bit. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I think this is a really common experience with kids. Like in elementary school, everyone wants to be an artist. Everyone will say, yes, I'm an artist. And then that starts dropping off, you know, in fourth, fifth, sixth grade. And for me, it was writing. Like I was writing poems from the time before I could even write, actually. My parents would probably write them down, or I would badly spell them out. And then in fourth grade, I started writing a novel, which was Redwall inspired. If your readers or listeners are familiar with that. And, you know, did the school newspaper in fifth grade and was writing stories for that. But then I started realizing writing is hard. Sometimes I don't have the ideas that can carry a story through. It's too hard to do this. And, you know, I was the kind of kid that school came easy to. So I thought, well, if writing is hard, then I'm not good at it. And that means that I'm not meant to do it. And I'm just going to give up. And so I just kind of stopped writing, honestly, until I had kids. That longing and dream never went away, but I really didn't pick it back up for quite a while. I think there's something about becoming a mom that makes you braver. and we were reading a lot of books, and that's when I started kind of to dabble in writing again. If I had known as a kid that real writers think writing is hard, it might have made a difference, right? And then also, you know, like I said, with homeschooling, I do think homeschool kids have this distinct advantage of having less judgment from peers, more input from parents, and more time to spend on those creative pursuits. So I'm just glad that my kids have been able to have that experience. So, but yeah, that was my journey with giving up on writing, and kind of really identified with Vincent, even though he was giving up art. It was the same emotional experience, I think.
I think it's really wonderful too, that your kids are getting to see you walk in that passion and give time to it. I think sometimes as homeschool moms, especially, we're so focused on our kids and what they need and giving them everything they need to be successful and equipping them, that sometimes we let our own gifts kind of languish off to the side. But I think it really is great when our kids can see us living into our God-given talents and passions and gifts also. So I'm so glad that that came back for you and that you were willing to give the time to it.
Yeah. And I would love to just interject that when I started writing more consistently and actually started to share that with my kids, I saw them take off in their creativity. They started valuing what they were doing more when they saw that it was something that I valued, right, in my own life. Like the, you know, kids, they're preparing for adulthood. And so if they see the adults in their lives don't value creativity, then they're not going to value it either. And my husband's a songwriter also. So that kind of like they've got both parents kind of modeling that, which I think is great and has really helped them to value creativity in our own lives. Because we're all creative, right? We have a way that is meant to be used in our life. It may not be vocational, but we have creativity that we can use to enrich our lives and the lives of others.
I wonder if someone is listening who is not sure how to support their child as a writer. Maybe it's a child that really struggles with writing, or maybe it's someone like you when you were little who, you know, is brimming with poems and stories and loves to write. Do you have any tips for parents on how to help that creativity develop?
Yeah, I probably have more tips for parents with kids who already are wanting to write. There's some really great programs out there. Well, first of all, like I would just, the number one thing that's been great for my oldest daughter who writes is having a creative community. So finding other kids, probably other homeschool kids for her, it has been, that also want to write and share stories and encourage each other and dream big together. That has been a huge thing for her. And, you know, being your kid's first audience, if they're wanting an audience and not always, I would say, find out what kind of feedback they're looking for. Like, are you wanting me to help you with this? Are you wanting to share it with me? Right. Because if a child brings you their writing, I would say with a younger child, they're definitely not looking for you to help help them with it. Maybe later on, but like an elementary school child, they're wanting to share their excitement with it. And if you're saying, oh, you misspelled that word, or why don't you do this differently? You know, I think it's very appropriate to ask questions like, what if this happened? Or what if, you know, but to maybe not treat creative pursuits the way we would treat other school subjects necessarily. There's also some great programs out there for homeschoolers. Daniel Schwabauer has some fantastic classes, writing classes for homeschoolers. There's a range of classes that he has, but they're all very creative focused, even the essay type ones, which that's what you want in writing. Like, that's what journalists are trying to do. They're trying to be creative in writing and not just like the same old thing like some writing programs do. And then he is an author himself, so he actually gives solid writing advice, where I feel like some homeschool programs don't give advice that is solid for writers. I've seen homeschool programs say said is dead, and that is not true. Said is invisible, and that's actually the word you want to use as a writer, like 90% of the time. So those are examples of like, yeah, sometimes regular writing programs are not always the best advice for kids who really want to write. And then for older kids, if they're really serious about it and you can invest in it, the Young Writers Workshop, I think, is a really fantastic option. And those are for kids who are really serious about their writing, wanting a community, wanting to grow in their skills. I think that's a great option for people.
That's really helpful. We'll be sure to link to all that in the show notes as well, because I know people are always looking for things they can plug into with their kids. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you've done to kind of nurture creativity with your kids? It sounds like giving them a lot of time to explore different passions and interests as part of it, and that supportive stance of not always having our homeschool mom hat on where we're grading everything they bring to us is helpful. Yeah. Is there anything else that comes to mind?
A couple things. So, you know, so we talked about writing, but I'll talk about other things. So like music, I have a very musical son, and he actually composes pieces on the piano. He's gotten very good at it and is interested in pursuing that as a career. But when he was younger, like 6 or 7, he would just bang on the piano. He was taking lessons and he would play his, you know, he'd practice, and then he would just kind of like bang around on it. Like, and it didn't always sound great, but I liked that he was enjoying what he was doing and experimenting. And so I let him do it. And I'm so glad now. You know, that it's, he just sits down and plays beautiful music because that banging around did something to educate his brain on how the piano worked and how music worked. So let your kids experiment in whatever it is. And then for those artistic kids, I would say get them like quality supplies. We always try to get, you know, like those Crayola paints, they're just not very good. So if your kid's interested in watercolor, get them a legit watercolor set. You know, if they're, a friend was telling me my daughter is interested in photography and she's like, you need to get her a legit camera. I'm like, you are so right. So, I mean, obviously there's finances can sometimes be an issue, but like we can make priorities and show our kids with our dollars what's important and that we believe in their pursuits and their interests. So yeah, that's what I would recommend.
Do you have any books about art or artists that you recommend, or series that your kids have enjoyed for going deeper into the topic of art?
there's a fun new book. I wouldn't say it's specifically about artists. It's actually called The Mona Lisa Vanishes. I did so much research about art heists for Beneath the Swirling Sky. And this is one that came out the week before mine. And I had known a lot of the information already, but it's a great read, I think, for kids that are interested in that kind of stuff. I actually just recently put out a list of other art-related novels on my blog, House Full of Bookworms. So people could look there and find that. It's not nonfiction. Those are all like fiction books related to art. Just off the top of my head, I'm just thinking of one related to writing that has helped my oldest daughter. It's called Spilling Ink. What I found is that a lot of books about writing for adults are not appropriate for kids. There's not very many. So Spilling Ink and Writing Magic by Gail Carson Levine, those two are very good, I think, for kids who want to write. I don't know about books about art specifically. I would just recommend like getting like an anthology of an artist's work and going through it with your kids, and maybe thinking about yourself, how you're going to approach when you get to a painting that does not hold your values, because there will be some of those in there. Think ahead how you're going to approach that. And that's definitely something that different families are going to approach differently, and that you definitely need to think through yourself before you do that with your kids, or before you take them to a museum, which I highly recommend taking your kids to a local art museum, but just know you're going to see some stuff that challenges your values. So in the book, I don't know if you've gotten to this part yet, but I didn't want to ignore the fact that there is a lot of nudity in art, but at one point the kids have to travel through a nude painting. I don't say what the painting is because I don't want kids to look it up on the internet. Like, we list all the other paintings, but not this one. But Vincent feels uncomfortable, and rightly so. And so they put something over their heads when they travel through that painting. And my pastor actually gave me some advice on writing that scene, which was very helpful in the way I approached it. But I think, yeah, definitely deciding beforehand how you're going to handle it as a family. To me, there is a difference between a nude painting that is not sexualized and a photograph of someone who is nude, right? There's a very big difference there. But if kids feel uncomfortable looking at a painting, I don't think they should be looking at it. I think tell them it's okay to turn away. That's the advice I give in the back of the book to kids and parents. Like, if you feel uncomfortable, you do not have to look at it.
Yeah, that's great advice in general, right? Like, you can trust your gut. If your conscience is telling you that this isn't something you need to be seeing, then
exactly,
go with that. Yeah. This is a middle grade book. Is that correct?
Yes.
So it's designed for
around 8 to 12. I've had a lot of high schoolers and older teens tell me that they really love it. So a lot of my beta readers were actually my daughter's friends. And some of them are like 18, 19 now. And they're just like promoting it on Instagram for me because they loved it so much. A lot of homeschoolers I know tend to continue reading middle grade in high school because, you know, the YA, you know, you have to be a lot more selective about that. And middle grade can just be fun adventure. So.
And I think it'd be a great read aloud too for the whole family, even if your kids are littler than that, right?
That's what Sarah McKenzie says, her endorsement.
There you go. Perfect. Yeah. I love that. Well, thank you so much for sharing your time with us today. We'll be sure to link to the book and all the other resources you mentioned. I wonder if you have any final words of encouragement for the homeschool moms and dads that are listening today.
Yeah, I would just say, you know, if you want to see your kids valuing their own creativity, let them see you doing something creative as well.
Where can people find you online, Carolyn, if they would like to connect with you more?
So there is carolynleiloglu.com, but I realize that's very hard to spell. So there's also House Full of Bookworms is my book review blog, and anywhere on social media, I'm House Full of Bookworms. And then, as we mentioned, there is therestorationist.com that's got all sorts of great resources. I think you can read the first chapter or two, listen to a sample from the audiobook, and find all the links to wherever you like to buy books.
Thank you, Carolyn, for sharing your story with us today. And thank you to each one of you for listening. We would love for you to hit subscribe or follow in your podcast player so you don't miss any of our upcoming episodes. And if you have been enjoying the show, we would be so grateful if you could tap those 5 stars in your podcast player and leave us a quick review. It only takes a minute or two, but it really does help new people find the show. You can find links to everything we talked about today at homeschoolcompass.com/podcast. And if you'd like to find even more inspiration for your homeschool journey, we would love to connect with you outside your podcast player. You can follow Homeschool Compass on Instagram and Facebook for daily encouragement for your homeschool life. We so enjoy getting to hang out with you there. Thank you again for listening today. And until next time, remember, you are loved and you are not alone.